This is Stephanie Bennett, Collections Archivist, with my colleague Rebecca Peterson-May, Public Services Archivist of Wake Forest University Special Collections and Archives. Today is January 21st, 2016, and we are speaking with Dr. Peter Ciavellis from the Political Science Department at the Z. Smith Reynolds Library on Wake Forest University's Rinalda campus. Dr. Ciavellis, if you could tell us your name, where you're from, where you consider home.
Okay, it's Peter Ciavellis. I was born in the Chicago area, the suburbs of Chicago. Been at Wake Forest for going on 19 years now. I'd like to say that I consider Winston-Salem home, but I still feel like a Midwesterner in a lot of ways.
Sure.
Just because this is a place that is hard to be accepted as someone who's from here, I think. But I love living here. I've enjoyed living here.
That's good.
But I still feel that special feeling when I land in O'Hare Airport that I'm back in the Midwest.
Home. There's something to that spirit of the regional spirit of the United States that you can't quite.
Yeah, when I moved here, I thought, you know, the United States is so homogeneous that it's not going to be different in the South. And then after 15 minutes of being here, I'm like, well, no, I was wrong. It's different.
Yeah.
In some good ways and in some not so good ways. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what your relationship with the Global Programs and Studies Office is? So how do you work with them? Or
that's pretty complex because I have a lot of hats at Wake Forest. So from the most general sense, I'm the Director of Latin American Latino Studies at Wake. And so just by nature of that position, I have a lot of interaction with international issues, international programs, international visitors that come to campus, obviously mostly from Latin America. But also, I'm on various steering committees, you know, for the Flow House, for all sorts of international programs. A lot of interaction with GPS since I've come to Wake Forest. And GPS in its various forms, it's been called other things as well. But really my main and principal engagement with GPS right now is directing two international programs in South America. One that we run during the spring semester that is going on 6 years old, and that's the Southern Cone program where students study in Argentina and Chile. That's done during the spring semester and usually with a faculty member, and usually really within the general model of Wake Study Abroad, like our house programs, but without a house. And I can talk more about that later, but I think it's better that we don't have a house actually in Latin America. Although I'm not criticizing the house programs. I think there's one, they're wonderful. I did two of them. And then we run a program in the fall, which we just started. We just finished our first semester, and we're recruiting for the second semester next fall. And that's Chile Honors. And that's really the only way you can get honors in Latin American Studies is by participating in this program. And the students go and they do independent research projects under the supervision of our Wake Forest resident director in Santiago. And students have to come up with their own topic, research it. They have a research symposium where they present the outcomes of their research, which Provost Kirsch went to this time around. And then the students are also, now that they're back on campus, going to present their research on campus, which we think is important to, you know, engage the campus with what's happening abroad. So those are my two sort of major interactions, or I guess responsibilities with GPS. But also in the past, I've also taken students abroad or directed programs in gone in the Venice House and then in the Vienna House, which were wonderful experiences.
Yeah, it sounds like you've done quite a bit in your time at Wake Forest with international study abroad programs. How or why did you decide to take on these responsibilities? How do they sort of mesh with your professorial duties?
Well, that's it's a kind of a long and complex story. For the most basic perspective, I'm really, really committed to international engagement for students. And I think the most important reason why is because thinking back in my own professional trajectory and when I was young, international study was really transformational for me. I mean, it changed my life in really deep ways. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now had I not early on had an international experience. I was an exchange student in Spain when I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I was a kid that had no, I mean, my family went to Milwaukee for vacation, right? You know, in a big year, St. Louis, you know, right? So for me, that was sort of a dream, right? But because a high school professor really encouraged me to do this overseas study experience. I went to Spain at 16 and had a incredible experience that really put me on the trajectory that I'm on today. You know, I wouldn't be doing what I do. I wouldn't speak Spanish the way I speak Spanish if it weren't for having participated in this program.
Did you stay in Spain for a whole year?
No, I was actually only there for a summer.
Only, right?
But then, you know, then that prompted me to go back again 2 years later and spend another summer with the same family. Uh-huh. Then to go back again in college and then spend a semester at the University of Granada. And then really, by that point, my Spanish skills and my interest in speaking Spanish, but also politics, right? Because I was in Spain right after Franco died and was put with a Franquista family, right? So that to me presented so many puzzles about life, because I really loved this family, but their political beliefs were so far from mine, because I grew up in like a hardcore democratic family, right? A hardcore leftist family. Uh-huh. And here they put me with these like Franco supporters that are literally singing, you know, nationalist fascist songs. And when the socialist government came to power in Spain, the host father said, no more newspapers in our house because this country's going straight to hell. All that sort of experience. But these people were just, I mean, they're like my family still. I'm still in touch with them now. And, and their son came and spent a summer at our house. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just that connection that was important. I mean, and to get back to the question, when I think about what this meant for me personally and professionally, I want other students to have the same kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that sort of answers the question, what is your international experience? Is it mostly in Spain or?
No, actually, I've directed the Venice program. I've directed the Vienna program. I've took a group of students over the summer to Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
On a service project, but also teaching a course. Don't ask me where I ever thought I was capable of teaching anything about Southeast Asia, but I did a course on international political economy with these students. So that was my Wake Forest international experience. Uh-huh. But my engagement with Latin America has been pretty deep. So I've traveled a lot to Latin America, not with students, but with my own research, and been almost in every country in Latin America, and now probably go to Chile in Argentina 4 or 5 times a year. So it's still but it's nice.
That's
because
great.
This is one of the beauties of the position I have, because I go often for students and can take care of all my own research stuff. But when I go to do my research, you know, funded by the Chilean government or whatever, I can also do things for the Wake Forest students in our program in there. So it's really a nice synergy.
So how many times have you been responsible for student trips outside the United States? Like, how many student groups would you say you've taken?
Well, I consider myself responsible for the students every semester in Chile.
Sure.
And I am, because when there's some sort of crisis, you know, we send resident directors that don't have a lot of experience in the country, so ultimately that responsibility falls to me. So I have a lot of interaction with our staff in Santiago and in Buenos Aires. But actually physically being the sort of the dad of the program, like when you actually have responsibility for the students on a day-to-day basis, that has been the Venice, Vienna, and Vietnam program, the three V's, right?
And you've already answered sort of what drew you to international experience. And was there anything in particular that drew you to teaching at the other Wake Forest houses before the Latin American programs?
More to have a more varied international experience that was not Latin America. To have a more European experience. I was very skeptical of going to Central Europe and being in Vienna, because I'd always been a Southern Mediterranean type of guy, right? You know, sunshine and sangria and beaches and all that sort of stuff. But I just loved Vienna. I mean, it was just amazing. And then Vietnam was just jaw-dropping. I mean, I felt like, when I got there, I felt like I was 16 again. I mean, I felt, you know, the wonder, because, you know, after a while, if you travel to Latin America so often, you're like, well, you know, it's different. You know, Colombia is different than Chile, but there's a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels. So in that mm-hmm. sense, you know, I wanted a little bit of variation. And what drew me in particular to the international experience of directing the Santiago program and the Santiago Buenos Aires program was really how much I love Chile. I mean, I just am passionate about the country. I feel like it's my second home. I always say you're truly bicultural when you're capable of hating two countries equally. So so there's things that about Chile that drive me absolutely insane, crazy, that are awful, like the classism and the racism, the inequality. Uh-huh. And there's things that drive me absolutely insane about the United States. But at the same time, which are some of the same things, right? But there's also things I love about both countries. And so I think this deep love I have for Chile, for the people, my friends there, the way the country looks, the way the country smells, the way everything, yeah. right? So I wanted students to have that experience as well. And so that's why I really got engaged with this Chile program in particular, given how much work it is.
Is Chile your main research area?
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So before sort of starting to take students abroad and work with international experiences, what were your expectations of teaching or administering those programs?
I bet every administrative person involved with international studies said exactly the same thing, exactly the same answer to this question, which is no one ever imagines how much work this is. I mean, it's an amazing amount of work, especially in the programs that I run because, you know, for example, we're engaged with foreign institutions, partner institutions, and we have to get all the courses that our students take there approved by our on-campus people, which is really difficult. There's important cultural differences between the way the academic systems in the two regions work. I can tell you what the day of graduation at Wake Forest is going to be in 5 years, but I can't tell you what the schedule will be in Chile next semester. I mean, they just, sure. it's just, and so students' expectations are that they want to know everything before they go. And I said, no, this is part of your learning experience. Things are done a different way there. Uh-huh. Also, it's a lot of work because it's a lot of maintaining a whole series of relationships. Because when you run an international program, you have relationships with the administration and responsibilities to them, reporting the wonderful SACs and all that sort of stuff, right?
Sure.
With GPS in terms of all the pre-departure orientation, what you have to worry about in terms of student security and safety. Mm-hmm. Chile's a huge seismic zone, so we're having earthquakes all the time. Oh, wow. So that means dealing with the parents, right? Because they call in a panic. Uh-huh. But also challenges with intercultural relationships because things, as I said, things are done a different way. And so administering across cultures is, can be a challenge, especially when you insert American students or American resident directors mm-hmm. that have certain expectations or don't have a lot of experience with Latin America in terms of just saying, well, you know, that's just sort of the way things are done and you just kind of have to accept it. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of work involved in these programs and even directing them and taking students also mm-hmm. because you're really... I hate to say it. I mean, it sounds really sort of, I don't know, I'm not sure how to describe it, but you're almost like a parent of these kids when you're with them. And so you're dealing with their own culture shock. You're dealing with relationships within the house or within the program, sometimes difficult relationships, to be quite frank, with drinking and how do you manage that and make sure students are responsible for their behavior. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more work that goes into it because a lot of people on campus, you know, a lot of professionals, oh, you're so lucky you get to do this. You get to spend a semester in Venice and Vienna. And I do think we're lucky to be able to do that, but it's not a walk in the park, right?
Yeah.
Right?
No,
certainly
sure.
is not.
Drinking cappuccino.
Exactly, exactly. And eating paninis.
Eating bonbons, yeah. Right. Spending every day at the gelato store. What do you know now that you wish you knew before taking on responsibilities, either related to the larger program or simply even taking, you know, mm-hmm. one static program abroad?
I think I've learned a lot. Like every time I do one of these international experiences, I think I learn more and more. And no matter how old you get, you keep learning. I think if there was one thing I wish I had known, it was would have been how much work is involved in it. Uh-huh. I might have negotiated more. but that said, I wouldn't give it up for anything. I mean, I think one of the reasons that I want to stay at Wake Forest is because this, particularly the Chile-Argentina piece of what I do with GPS, meshes so well with what my research interests are. And it just kind of fits together well.
Mm-hmm. Have you had students come back and want to like join you in your research, or you know, because they like recognize that you have a close relationship with Chile that maybe they want to replicate?
Yes, that's happened very often. You know, more generally, I am impressed with how often. And this is happening this week, in fact, right after the students are back on campus mm-hmm. from the Chile Honors Program. I'm impressed with how, without being prompted, without me saying, hey, how are you? What are you doing? How often they come by my office just to stick their head in and talk about mm-hmm. their experience, about how important it was for them, uh-huh. about how it transformed their lives, about how they're having a little bit of trouble adjusting to being back on campus because everything seems really small and parochial here mm-hmm. after you live in Santiago and Buenos Aires. I mean, you come back to Winston-Salem and it's sort of like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's funny because so many students are like, you know, I'm hesitant to study abroad because I really don't want to leave Wake because I love it. And I say to them, when you get back, nothing will have changed, right? I mean, it's going to be the same dramas, the same things going on in your sorority. And invariably they say, you know what, you were right. I mean, nothing's changed, and it's kind of a drag. I wish that something, you know, same old, that something wasn't same old, same old. So
that's really funny. So this can sort of be interpreted in a number of contexts, but and what were you most excited about before your experiences internationally? So again, either taking one program or before the Chile-Argentina program mm-hmm. started. And how has that compared to the actual experiences?
Well, I think I would have to highlight the Vietnam experience probably yeah. in terms of one that there was expectations and then and what happened was sort of different than what the expectations were. Uh-huh. I mean, first of all, as I already mentioned, it was that immediate sense of awe that, wow, this is really different. This, you know, I see it when the students land in Chile, right? I've been there 17 million times, right? So I'm just like, yeah, here we are in Santiago again. You know? Here's where I go, here's what I do, here's my friends, here's, you know. So to me, it's just like being at home. Uh-huh. And they're just like, wow. In Vietnam, I was that person. I was like, wow, this is so amazing. You know, the culture is different, the way of thinking is different, the way everything looks is different, the food is so different. So from a most basic sense, I don't even remember what my expectations were, but they were like met and exceeded, and I found it just an incredibly fascinating experience. To talk about a particular experience, we traveled all throughout Vietnam from north to south, right? And in the middle, there was a service project in a very rural village on the Mekong River Delta. So before going, I was like, oh, it's going to be so great to see all Vietnam, but that week, that week doing that service project is going to be a real drag. You know, like we're going to be stuck in some little village in the middle of nowhere. We're going to be hauling concrete in 700 degree weather with 400% humidity. It's going to be terrible. That was the best week, I mean, by far, because we were in this village where people had literally, except the old people had seen American soldiers, people literally had not seen Westerners. We had to take a bus for a half an hour and then get on a boat and take that for another half hour to get to this place. It was in the middle of nowhere. And the people were so wonderful, and the interactions between the students and the people in the village, because we were all working together on this project. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, I'm very skeptical of these service projects, because I used to say, you know what? This is costing an enormous sum of money. If this costs 50 grand, send the village the 50 grand and let them decide what to do with it. But my opinion on that has changed because I saw the cross-cultural interchange that was happening in the village. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about, because we could have paid 50 grand to have the work done we had done by just some local construction firm. But in the end, the transformational experience, both for the people in the village in Vietnam and for our students, made me see that these things really are valuable. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really worth something.
how did you, since you were a little bit skeptical of the trip perhaps in advance, how did you end up going in the first place?
Mary Girardi, who has a real close relationship with Vietnam and loves Vietnam, had said to me for years, "Peter, you'd be fantastic, you should go, we really need to go." And I kept saying, "Mary, I study Latin America, I can do this." And she's like, no, it's not about regional expertise, it's about what you can bring personally to the program. And so for years she kind of pressured me to do this, and then finally I gave in and said, okay, I'll spend some months doing some research on Vietnam, figure out how it can fit into my own teaching mm-hmm. interests, because I do teach political economy, and it's a fascinating case uh-huh. with respect to political economy. So I felt comfortable enough to do it, and I'm glad I did. I mean, I really am, you know, grateful to Mary for uh-huh. her persistence. and she's gone to Vietnam many, many times. She sort of loves Vietnam the way I love Chile.
Now, have you talked her into going to Chile?
No, maybe that should be the next. That should be the next step. We had talked about doing some things in Latin America, but they've really not come to fruition. Maybe I need to revisit that with her. And this interview can serve as prompting me to do that.
We'll right? put it online and point you to it.
Right.
Do you think you'll go back to Vietnam having done this?
You know, I think, I'm not sure Mary's running the same kind of program she has before. So without her, I'm not sure I see an opportunity. Maybe once my kids are finished with, you know, school, maybe just as a, going back as sort of a tourist in some way, because I love Southeast Asia and I'd love to see the rest of it. I mean, we went to Vietnam and Cambodia, so I'd maybe spend more time there, but just more for personal reasons. Yeah.
So what were your biggest concerns about being responsible for students living abroad? And again, how did those compare with what has actually happened?
Well, from the most basic sense, both in my role directing the Flo House and Casa Artem, and in my role directing the Santiago program, obviously it's safety, like it's basic safety. Like you go to bed some nights thinking, oh, I wonder what's happening there, or I wonder what's going on, or I wonder where the students are, or what are they doing? And we've had challenges. Mm-hmm. I mean, for legal reasons, I probably can't go into mm-hmm. them. But we've had some really serious challenges with respect to basic safety, even though the GPS does an amazing job of prepping students and telling them what they should do and what they should not do. We've had things happen, some pretty unpleasant things. And so I worry about that a lot, right? I worry about that a lot, and I try and make that clear to the students and to other faculty members that are going that they really need to be on top of those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got this email from a student, you know, in Chile, and she said, "I was in Plaza Baquedano last night at 3 a.m. and I saw XYZ and I was wondering what that was." And my response was, "What the hell were you doing in Plaza Baquedano at 3 a.m.? You have no business being there at that," you know, those sorts of things. So we want to keep the students safe.
Make
good choices, exactly. No, as a parent, you know, someone's like, "Yeah, make good choices. Is that a good choice you're making right now?" So, And that's everybody, and I've seen that in the GPS, I've seen that in the administration, that's our most, and we've got really great, mm-hmm. for some of the most unpleasant things that have happened, we've got really great policies in place to make sure we deal with what's happening.
That's good.
Yes. But on a deeper level, I worry about the students and their sense of cultural immersion. And this mm-hmm. this has been constant since, you know, I led the Venice program in 2003. One day I came home and walked into the house, and in the main hallway the students were all sitting there on the couch looking at their laptops, and then another set looking at, this is going to date me and date them, on the television of all the episodes of Sex and the City mm-hmm. that somebody had sent them on CD. And I screamed at the top of my lungs. I said, "I am going to throw your damn computers in the canal. You're in Venice. Get out on the street. Don't sit here emailing your friends, watching Sex and the City. Go out and talk to people and experience the culture in order to play the pot stuff, for God's sakes. I mean, do something, right?" And so I really, really worry about that. And that, I think, is our biggest challenge, not just for the house programs, but all the programs, because I spend a lot of times with the students in Santiago and in Buenos Aires. They're texting their parents every 10 minutes, everything that's going on. You know, they don't cut the umbilical cord. On my first experience in Spain when I went, it's hilarious. Like, this will tell you how old I am. I clearly remember these little tri-fold envelopes that the post office used to have to mail things cheaply. Like, you'd write your letter and then fold it in three and glue it and send it, put in the mail. Or I said to my, you know, when I was in Spain and in college as well, I said to my mom, I'll call you once a month. Mm-hmm. And so you'd go to the call center, right? There's this little, like place called La Telefónica. You go there and you'd be like, I'd like to call the United States. And you give the person the number. And then all of a sudden this woman comes online. She's like, Señor Ciaveles, pase a la cabina cuatro. And go to booth four. And then there you pick up the phone and you talk really fast. Because like the money's clicking, right? Hi, mom, I'm fine. I'm not dead. No, I'm behaving. Okay, yeah, I hope you're all well. Bye. And that was it for a month. Compared to constant texts back and forth, Skyping, watching Netflix, watching American TV. And so I think we really have to find ways, and this is what we've tried to do in my own program, to find ways that students are, in my case, talking to Chileans, going out with Chileans, dating Chileans, right? I mean, you know, really getting to know what this culture is and not just hanging out with the American group and being connected to the United States 24/7.
That's interesting. This sort of leads into what you've said. What has surprised you most about Wake Forest student interactions with foreign cultures?
I think the biggest surprise has been that you can never predict what students are gonna do, right? Because there's times when, I mean, some embrace the culture completely. You know, in Vienna, there was this kid that he was never in the house, which I was glad about, right? He was never in the house. I'm like, where were you? Oh, I'm in this indie rock band, you know, this Viennese indie rock band, and we're playing here, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. And so some kids just jump in. Other kids are like deer in the headlights. Like, I remember another kid in Vienna, we went to the grocery store the first day, and he just literally stood there immobile with his little shopping basket, not knowing what to do. I mean, all the food was different. His mother had probably cooked every meal in his life, right? And he just like didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to check out. He didn't know anything. But so as time goes on, the surprise is often the kids you think are going to jump in there and embrace the whole thing don't. And a lot of times the kids you're really, really concerned about do.
Yeah.
And they really get into it and are really, I remember really clearly the second year we ran the Chile program, two of the girls that were participating, I was in Chile with them, and they came to me and said, I'm freaking out. I don't know what to do. I can't understand anybody. It's almost like, you know, film this and put this in a documentary on culture shock. Like, the look on their face was like, eh. And I want to switch out into a lower Spanish class, right? Well, one of these two girls, by the time I went down to the program at the end, was speaking fluent Spanish beautifully, right? And telling me about all of her plans to make a career in Latin America. So you never know. You never know what they're going to do. I mean, some just embrace it, and some come home and say, I really didn't like that place. Right? So
that's interesting. Do you think, like, over the years you've gotten better at identifying the students who will take more to it, or
no absolutely not? It seems completely unpredictable. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
in some ways.
Right.
It's not
right.
Great in others, but what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've faced while abroad, or while administrating an abroad program?
I think I've covered that. I mean, I think the challenges for me are making sure to communicate the importance of safety to students. One semester we arrived in Buenos Aires And within 24 hours, there was this massive train wreck that killed hundreds of people, right, on public transportation. And we had clearly said in our pre-departure orientation that the students needed, when anything happened, to immediately check in with us, right? We have a whole system. We give them phones. They're supposed to text us immediately if they hear of anything. We texted them immediately and said, major train wreck in Buenos Aires, immediately text us with where you are and that you're safe. Mm-hmm. You know, half of them are like, what? You know, I mean, no response, whatever. So I think getting across to them that they need to take responsibility for themselves, right? And make good choices, as you said. Like, you know, think a little bit logically. You know, if there was just a 7.4 earthquake, maybe I should text someone and tell them I'm safe because my parents are calling Winston-Salem.
Yeah, right.
And then second, the challenge of trying to find ways to incentivize students to do what I said, to get out there. Because it's hard. Mm-hmm. If you don't speak the language, if you're not familiar with the culture, it's intimidating.
Sure.
You know, one student, she said to me, her mother, her host mother called me and said, you know, she's never going out, she's not doing anything, she seems really isolated. So I called her and I said, what's the problem? She says, well, I have no money. That's my problem. So I arranged to get her some additional scholarship money. It turns out she had plenty of money. She was just really anxious about even leaving the house. So finding ways to make students comfortable with putting themselves out there and embarrassing themselves. I did it. I mean, you know, when I was 16, I can't tell you how many obscenities I said in Spanish without realizing and insulting people. And that's how you learn the language, right? Mm-hmm. And you just have to be willing to let people laugh at you a little bit.
Sure. Since you mentioned the host mother, maybe now's a good time to talk about, so the program in Chile is in Argentina, is that a host?
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about the program. I don't know that much about it.
With both of the programs, both the spring program where the students are in Buenos Aires and in Argentina, and the fall program where it's just Chile honors, they are with host families. And usually they're long-standing host family relationships that we have. They're not just one-off. And these are people that like the money, right? But are not doing it for the money. They're doing it because there's a couple models. You know, usually it's like widows or divorced single women who might need a little more income, but also would like a young person in the house, right? Or young families who want their children to be exposed to English. Those are sort of the two basic kind of people that we find. And the students, they get two meals a day in the house, and we want that not to be, here's your sandwich that I have to make you contractually, but no, that we're sitting down and we're talking. You know, I in Chile, when I go to do the orientation, when the students are just there, I give them an assignment. I say, tonight, I want you, because we tour the presidential palace. There was a major military coup in Chile in 1973. Mm-hmm. The presidential palace was bombed. It started a 20-year dictatorship. 3,000 people disappeared. You know, almost 1 million people went into exile. I mean, it was a horrible national tragedy on September 11th, you know, coincidentally. So I tell the students, go home tonight and ask your parents what they were doing on September 11th. Mm-hmm. And that just initiates a whole conversation about the politics of the country, the past of the country, what the parents' political orientations are. Two of the students came back this last time and said, oh my gosh, my parents are Pinochetistas. They support Pinochet. And I'm like, whoa, they were in awe of that. So I just forgot what the question was, but.
Learning more about the program.
Oh, about the program, that's right. And the family, that's right, the family stays. So I really am committed to host family stays for cultural immersion and for learning the language, because a lot of programs have kids either in dormitories or staying in, you know, in a house. But I think in terms of cultural immersion and language, you get the most out of the host family experience. Again, I'm not discounting the Venice and Vienna experience or London. I loved those programs, but to me that was more also about building faculty-student relationships in an international context. And it was not as immersive as the programs that we tried to design in Chile, and that was intentional. Because at first, when I first came to Wake Forest under President Hearn, we actually were sent on a mission. There was a committee of us that went to Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay in one trip, and Panama, Costa Rica, and Ecuador on another trip to find a house, mm-hmm. Wake Forest yeah. house in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And then there was September 11th, financial mm-hmm. issues, and that was put on hold. I'm sort of glad it was, because I think ultimately this is a better experience for our students, the way we've set it up in Chile and Argentina.
When you designed the program, did you talk at all with the Dijon folks and program directors? Like, was this
sort of related
to that?
There's a group of program directors that are Venice, Vienna, London, Dijon, Salamanca. Uh-huh. And we work together, we're very close, we collaborate, we try and learn from each other. Mm-hmm. I've learned a tremendous amount from Sally Barber, Dijon, and from Candelas Gala in Salamanca, because their programs are a little more similar to mine, mm-hmm. because their family stays. Although theirs are language programs, and mine is open to anybody on campus, irrespective of their language. So there are different uh-huh. models with respect to that. Mine's almost a hybrid of Salamanca, Dijon, and the house programs, mm-hmm. because it's open to any student, yeah. and we send a faculty member in a different discipline, like it could be biology, we've had health, exercise, science, politics. So it's more varied in that sense. But we do learn a lot from each other, but my program is the baby program. I mean, it's the new one. Yeah. And so, you know, Klein Harrison has been a tremendous support and help for me, because he and I have worked hard on this program. And he really seeks to try and get program directors to learn from each other uh-huh. as the design of the program. But also, it's funny, because every year we've made improvements to it. It's been like the first year, some stuff went wrong, but then you learn, and then yeah, the second year's sure. better, the third year's better, and the program's also expanded. You know, uh-huh. we've got a full-time faculty director in Santiago now, like they do in Salamanca and Dijon, uh-huh. and we have a faculty apartment in Chile now that the faculty member from Wake Forest, when he or she goes, stays there, that we rent on a long-term nice. Basis.
Yeah.
So it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger as time has gone on.
I have one more question about the program, just because I don't know that much about it.
Sure.
So, do they take the curriculum there? Do they take classes at a local university, or is it all the students from Wake Forest together? Or how does the class situation work?
I'm glad you asked that, because that's one of the aspects of the program that I'm most proud of, and I don't think you're going to find this in any international programs, not just at Wake, but also across the board in the United States. The biggest challenge, and I think the people in GPS would agree with me, is when two universities start sitting down and negotiating with each other, it's about money, right? And we have to think about money, obviously. So what usually happens is how many seats are you filling and how many seats are we filling? So if we have five students sitting in your class, you have to have five students sitting in our class, mm-hmm. tit for tat. We identified Universidad Diego Portales in Chile. We visit a lot of universities, and the big major universities, the big state universities, and the biggest and most prestigious university in Chile, La Universidad Católica, where I was a visiting professor and I had some relationships, they said, here, you can pick this menu of options like Harvard does or Stanford does, and then that's all we'll offer you. Mm-hmm. Diego Portales said, what do you want? Uh-huh. And we said, we want a classroom with Chileans sitting in it and Americans sitting in it, and we want to quit counting seats. Just as many as go back and forth. They agreed to it, we agreed to it, to Klein's credit, right? And so now we have this unique program where, in the spring, the students go with a Wake faculty member. That faculty member teaches two courses in his or her discipline, but the students don't have to take both uh-huh. of them necessarily, they have to take only one. Uh-huh. Then the courses are filled out with a Spanish class, humanities class, and then one or two classes at the local university. Mm-hmm. So the two classes are taught in English, right, by the Wake professor, and then the other classes are taught in Spanish.
Now, even students, like the humanities?
No, that's in English as well,
yeah.
right?
Okay.
But the Spanish classes taught in Spanish, right? And then the one that the students would opt for, uh-huh. right? We do have some options. So let's say a student has zero Spanish experience or very little Spanish experience, they have to enroll in a basic Spanish class, but we have English language options for them, because a couple of the courses at the local university are taught in English. Mm-hmm. Because right now in Latin America, like in most of the world, students want courses in English, uh-huh. right? But for the majority of students that go on the program, they're taking the Wake Forest professor's class and then classes at the local university. Usually in their major, like if they're a comm major, communications classes, if they're a religion major, religion classes. And it's fascinating because you sit in the class, and right now there's massive student protests going on in Chile. The universities have been shut down. It's been a challenge. That's one of the challenges we face is we have to find space for our students because the students have occupied the university. They're on strike, demanding free universal education. So you sit in a room with Chilean students and then American students and talk about, should education be free? Is it a basic human right? They have completely different views of this, especially Wake kids, right?
Right, sure.
Right? Because I always, you know, one time I said, we were in Vienna and the streets filled with student protesters and they were outraged because according to the Austrian constitution, education is free through college. But the government wanted to institute a 200 euro fee.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so I said to our students, I'm like, oh, that's like about what Wake Forest charges, right? But they're out on the streets, right, about 200 euros.
Yeah.
So take any cultural, political issue and put Chilean students and American students in the same room and they have fascinating discussions and they learn a lot. They learn a lot.
That's great. This, I feel like you've probably already answered, but just in case you have a different answer than I might assume, what has been your favorite cultural experience so far, personally and or professionally, in your international experiences?
I think I would have to say it was that moment many, many years ago when I was 16, when I was with that fascist family, right, and talking to them and learning about them, but also seeing the beautiful family they had and the beautiful family dynamic they had and realizing that people can believe different things and think different things and still be decent human beings, right? And also that you could have such affection for them and like them so much. And it's really funny because when I was 16, my host father in Spain, I told you he was outraged by the socialists winning. He was outraged by what was happening in the country. And so talking to him and learning from him, I think, was, and the family dynamic and everything, was a transformational experience and my best experience internationally. But what's funny about that is when I go back now, and I was just there 2 years ago to see them, he's still talking the same way. Like, he's like 85 years old, and he's like, I can't believe this. A female defense minister. How is that possible? Plus, she's pregnant. How can you have a female defense minister out there with her belly sticking out, blah, 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 and going on and on, saying the most reprehensible things that I don't believe in, right?
Yeah.
But it's almost like you give him a pass.
Right.
Because it's not your country, and it's not, you know, if my dad said something like that, we'd be, you know, he never would, but we'd be arguing at the table. He's like, gay marriage? Gay marriage? What's this gay marriage thing? He's like, you know, when you're out in the countryside, you don't see two bulls marrying each other. And I just looked at him like, well, you know, and generally you don't see cattle marrying each other. Like, you don't see cows marrying bulls either. Right? And so we laugh about that and everything, but it's just, I don't know, it's just trying to understand the political trajectory of a country and why people think what they think through the lens of a personal relationship, I think, has been my most transformational experience, and probably why I study politics. I would almost bet you that's why, because of that family, right?
Were you able, as a teenager, like, did you make known your disagreements, or did you just sort of sit back and absorb?
No, because my language skills were not at the point that I could really engage with him, but also I was hesitant to, because again, I was in a different culture. And it's funny, because I talked to my host brother, who's exactly my age, right? And it's one of my best friends in the world. And we talk about his dad all the time. Like, my host brother tends to be on the right, but not like that. Like,
sure.
And so we laugh and we joke about that. So we'll talk about what Roman Sr. thinks is what's wrong with it. But I never, I'm just like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Right, you're not changing
it. No.
How prepared were you as an administrator for the programs, I would say, to help students navigate intercultural situations and experiences, and how has that changed as you've gained experience?
I think I was really well prepared by the time Chile came around, because I had spent so much time with international experiences. And I'd spent so much time in Chile, and I kind of get the culture. I get little tiny facets of the culture that I would want to share with the students. You know, things like, you know, for example, a Chilean might say, "Oh, well, next time you're here, call us. We'll have dinner, or we'll have a meeting, or whatever." That doesn't mean you necessarily have to do that, right? Americans are very literal, and Chileans are very. There's just differences in the way the culture. Like one time. I mean, even now, after all these years, you know, the dean at Diego Botales said to me, "Oh, well, when we're in Chile next time, let's have lunch and we'll talk more. Set up a meeting with me." So I did. And I get there, the director of international programs says, "Well, what is this meeting with the dean about?" I said, "I don't know. She asked for it." And the director of international programs says, "Well, she just called me and said, why did you want to meet her?" I'm like, "Well, because she told me." I mean, but she didn't really mean it, right? And so, I guess what I'm saying is I felt well prepared because I had so many international experiences and I can help share this with the students, but I would say that I'm always learning. I'm always learning more every time I go, every time I do something, every time I engage with students.
Yeah. How have your international experiences with Wake Forest students informed your work and your relationship with Wake Forest as a whole and like the Rinalda campus?
Right. As I said, I think, you know, Wake Forest is based on the premise of the teacher-scholar ideal, right? And I don't think those are just words. I think that's true. And so I think what's been great about this engagement in this program, first of all, is that I've been able to do that. Mm-hmm. Like my teaching, my scholarship, and my service all sort of mesh together in this way. I hate the word synergies because it's overused, but it really is. I mean, it just works together really, really well. So this has been great for my relationship with Wake Forest. And I think it's enriched what happens on the Rinalda campus. The other aspect of it that I've really enjoyed is being able to connect with people all across campus. Because you meet people in this capacity, people that want to go lead the Chile program, people in the GPS, Mary Girardi, you know, all these people that I think are super interesting people and good to know. And also, having more intimate interactions intellectually with students. Like, it's one thing to have them in a class, but it's another thing to be sitting around a table in Venice having a beer and talking about Italian politics and what's happened, or going on some cultural field trip in Chile with students and being, you know, we go to Easter Island, we go to these fabulous places, and to Machu Picchu, and being with students there and seeing and talking with them and getting to know them better. So it's enriching all around, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think you've already answered how your perspective has sort of changed after being abroad. What is it like for you to return to Wake Forest? I mean, at this point, you've come back and forth between international countries and Wake Forest, mm-hmm. and perhaps there's very little culture shock at this point, but...
I mean, I think... Because I have really one foot in each country, the culture shock is not so much. It's more this kind of, oh, this is irritating me about Chile. Oh, this is irritating me about the United States. You know what I said before, the capacity to hate two countries equally. So it's more of that. But when I do spend extensive periods, like long periods in Chile, I can be at the point where I'm like, I'm so tired of this country. And then I get back to the United States, and I'm like, I wish I was in Chile. You know, I mean, then, so it's that sort of thing. So there's a little bit of culture shock. But I do have to say, and I say this to the students, in my long time spending extended periods of time over abroad, my most serious culture shock has always been coming back to the United States, more than ever going there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why. I think part of it could be, It's not exciting going home, right? It's exciting going somewhere else, right? For most people. For some people, it's exciting going home, right?
Yeah, right.
So I think that's part of it. But I also think part of it is you are, this again, return to this capacity to hate two countries, you're much more critical of what is yours. Mm-hmm. Like you get much, like I get much more irritated by Donald Trump than I would by a similar politician in another country, say, that I'm living in. Or I'd be much less tolerant of my family saying what my host family in Spain would say, right? So I think that's part of this cultural shock and the change when you go from country to country.
It's more charming when it's in another country.
That's right.
Less ownership over it somehow. And I feel like you've discussed a great deal how your international experience has changed you. Is there anything in particular about being a program administrator, again, for these Chilean programs, that has changed you? Do you think you've become more of a parent, perhaps, to, you know, taking on that leadership role, or?
I would just say that probably taking the administrative role as opposed to the simple research role, that, and this may sound like really mundane and boring, but I understand much better the nuts and bolts of the Chilean university system.
Yeah.
I understand the challenges faced by administrators there. I understand better the challenges facing educating students in a environment of minimal resources. We complain about having no resources at Wake Forest. It's just, we are rich. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are rich in terms of what we have and what we can do for students that cannot be done in Chile. You know, the library at the Universidad Católica, where I was a visiting professor, again, you know, now with international, I'm sorry, with electronic sources, this is less of an issue, but when I was teaching at the Universidad Católica many years ago, you know, my high school library was better than their university library. So I think I've been benefited as an administrator seeing what the challenges facing the a university system in a developing country are.
And a last big picture question, what are your hopes for the future regarding international professional opportunities for you and teaching opportunities and for the programs that you've helped build?
Again, it's about money, and you can share this interview with the provost if you want to. But my long-term goal in starting this program in Chile is really to be, have some sort of Wake Forest Center in Santiago to deepen both relationships between students, to get some students from Chile up here, but in the center there, to have more academic events going on, have a greater connection between the law school, the med school, and the divinity school through the basis of this Santiago Center. But again, that costs money, right? That's like what I would like to see happen institutionally. And that's what I will work towards, and we'll see what happens. You know, right now with the financial situation of the university and also with expanding campus downtown, all the rest of it, it might be difficult. But on a micro level, it's thinking creatively about ways to make sure that the students, both in my programs and in the programs where I'm in the steering committees, have this deeper cultural immersion that is getting more and more challenging the smaller the world gets. I mean, it really is tough to get students to just put that iPhone away for a while and sit back and look at what's happening around them, talk to people, that sort of thing.
Great. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you would like to highlight, or?
No, I just would, I mean, you've been incredibly thorough. I would just say that I'm gratified that you're doing this project, because I do think that international education is a central part of an undergraduate experience. I think it should be required. So I'm glad that you're documenting what has been happening in these programs, and so we can really have concrete data on what are the benefits, you know, more than what I have to say, but what the students have to say when they get back and how these experiences are transformational for them. I think that's, so I'm just gratified that you're doing this, and thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for spending time with us today.